So you heard where Dan is today. I ask you to remember to continue praying for him and his family and the family of Ernie Gibson at Foots Creek. The song we just sang, I'm reminded that back in the 50s, there was a book that hit the Christian scene that created a bit of a stir, not because of its theme, but because of the author. The author was Anglican. The author was, in this country, Episcopalian. And as some of us would recognize, you know the question that was asked regarding Jesus? What good can come out of Nazareth? What good can come out of Anglicanism or Episcopal? They're not one of us. What was the book? Your God is too small. And what have we been singing about? The greatness of God. And the Anglican priest was saying, we need to have a better grip on just who God is. We think in terms of God being small when he is great. This morning, I would like to take a few minutes and kind of review something we know about the greatness of God in a way that I hope when we're through, you'll recognize it's personal. Not that it does not exist, God's greatness does not exist apart from us and in the big world. But rather, each one of us should have eyes to see what God is doing, sometimes to us, sometimes with us, and sometimes just allowing us to be on the train of the roller coaster and not being the engineer, but being a passenger as God is at work, and then say, wow, wow, that's God stuff. Looking at a couple of Psalms, the first is Psalm 77:13, just picking up a phrase. The psalmist asks, what God is great like our God? The second is found in the 95th Psalm, and there are several verses there, verses 3-7. For the Lord, that's Jehovah God, is a great God and a great King above all gods, in whose hands are the depths of the earth. The peaks of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for it was he who made it. His hands formed the dry land. Come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord Jehovah, our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture. Sometimes it's easy for me to forget that God really is alive and active in this world. And I found that it's good for me to be able to look back on the experiences we have recorded in the Bible about what God has done in the past. Some people will say, yes, but that's just the Bible. It's not trustworthy to begin with. Those are folk tales. And then we can look at Christian history and see some things that occurred that, how do we explain them any other way? and I look at some of the events that I have been able to witness, and I ask the same question. This has to be God's stuff. And when we're through, I would like for you to be able to look at your life, your history, and do you recognize God's hand at work? We sing that our God is a great God. Is he really? I would like for that to be affirmative for all of us. First of all, if we look at the history of Israel and their experience, and just cherry pick some events along the way without going into detail, because if we've been in the church very long, we've heard the stories. What about God's deliverance from Egypt? Deliverance of the people that he has chosen for himself. They're threatened by Pharaoh's army, and they're backed up against the sea. And how do they get away? Do you believe the biblical record? God parted the waters, and the people of Israel, however many it may have been, marched across the seabed to the other side. And as they were pursued by the Egyptian army, what occurred? God's withholding of the water was lifted, and the Egyptian army drowned in the sea. Fairy tale? Well, let it stand alone, and maybe we could be justified in saying, yeah, it's a fairy tale, nice story. But it wasn't the only event. Out in that wilderness area, the people got hungry. You remember what God did? God provided some kind of bread that we call manna, and he fed those people. Fed them to the place where it became boring to have dinner. If we move on through the scriptures, we find God is involved in the creating of storms and the calming of storms at remarkable points in history. I was rereading some history earlier this week. How many of you recognize the name Charles Martel? A few of you do. Charles Martel was a European soldier who knew that the Muslims were coming across the Pyrenees Mountains, and their threat was to conquer all of Europe. And with a smaller, very well-trained army, he met the Muslims in southern France and defeated them. Other historians have said that if that battle had not occurred, if Martel had not won, today Europe would be Muslim. Many of us are convinced God's hand was in that. I hope that you can listen to some of these illustrations I want to give with the ears that I hope you have. On several occasions in my life, I feel as though I've been along for a ride and I was not controlling anything. And I look back, and my confidence in the God that I say is great, truly is great. I was taking some classes when I was still in college at a second school and trying to blend classes together toward a goal, a particular degree, which, by the way, I never completed. The class was taught by an ex-Catholic priest. You know, I need to back up. That's a different story that I want to tell you. Same college, different class. Okay. The prof took great delight in asking, in the first time we met together, how many of you here are Christians? And in this class of probably 75 students, there were maybe 20 that raised their hands. And he proceeded to berate Christianity. How foolish it is to believe that stuff. One night after class, and it was an evening class, I walked out to his car with him. And I asked him why he took great delight in making those kinds of derogatory comments towards Christians. And his response basically was, well, you have nothing to support what you believe. It's foolishness. It's fairy tale stuff. I asked him what he would like to have occur in order to indicate that it's valid, that it's true. And I remember distinctly, as we were walking toward his car, he stopped and turned toward me and he said, I don't know. His derogatory comments toward Christian students stopped that night. Did I have that planned out? Had I thought ahead to say if he says, I don't know, or I can't answer my question? No. I don't know where the question came from that I posed to him. But it came, and it silenced that man's mouth for the rest of at least that term. Following that, several years later, I was on a church staff for a couple of years. And after a period of a couple more years, I came to the conclusion that really, this was not a good fit. I probably should not be there, so I submitted my resignation. And when it took effect, I had no job to go to. I had no bank account, no savings. We were living month to month. I had a wife and four children to feed, house payment to make. I remember getting up and telling my wife that I was going to go into Portland and nose around for a job. We needed a paycheck. First place I went into, now if you folks know me, this would not surprise you. I went to a Christian bookstore. As I walked in, the manager, Meredith, got out of his office, came to me and said, have you talked to Bob yet? I said, no. Am I supposed to? Well, he called here a few minutes ago and said, if you drop in, he wants to see you in his office as quickly as you can get there. Bob was my former employer in the radio business. I went into his office, sat down. He closed the door. That's not usually a good sign with him. Okay. And he proceeded to tell me a short story. He had to fire an employee that morning. The man had been directing the records from record companies to the radio station to his home address. He was stealing records from the radio station. Bob said, I had to fire him on the spot. He goes to work at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Can you help me out? And that turned into another 10 years of employment. Could I pull those strings? Huh? My God is great. He does indeed take care of us. After a couple of years in that position, the radio station in Portland, Bob, asked me if I'd be willing to move to Eugene. They had purchased another radio station, and he said the manager there needs help. He needs help in the person of someone who understands Christian broadcasting, the programming of it. He asked if I would go. It was a critical time in my life that due to some other things had been going on. I've been trying to leave the Portland area for about a year. And I could not pull anything together. We had quite a bit of equity in our house. I'd hoped to be able to convert the equity into some cash. And let me go out of town somewhere and purchase or start a, guess what? A Christian bookstore. Okay? I couldn't pull anything together. And now he comes along at a critical point in my life and says, would you be willing to go to Eugene if we pay for you moving? They didn't pay for anybody to move anywhere at any time. They did not pay for the moving expense of an incoming employee. My God, it's great. I was in Eugene for a couple of years, and I met a fellow named Wes Hurd. Wes had been a campus crusader. He was a seminary grad. He had come to Eugene to go to the University of Oregon in order to earn a degree in education policy and administration. Early in his time at the university working toward his PhD, he realized Christian students were being shot out of the water by professors who were not simply unbelievers. They were atheists. Many were the next thing to communists. They made life hellish for Christian students. Wes was able to convince a half dozen businessmen in Eugene to ante up some money that would allow them to rent a 5-bedroom house across the street from Mac Court. You know what Mac Court is in Eugene? That's the old basketball pavilion, seating over 10,000 people, and that's where the Ducks played. So they're right next to the campus. And Wes proceeded to hold classes in this 5-bedroom house, renting out the 5 bedrooms to U of O students so they could continue to pay for the rent. Every now and then you will hear Pastor Dan talk about Ray Steadman. Ray Steadman was pastoring a church in the Bay Area, Palo Alto, Peninsula Bible Church. Peninsula Bible Church was on the cutting edge of what was referred to as the Protestant church growth movement. And there was a disagreement that occurred between Ray Steadman and some of his staff members who were part of an in-house Bible school seminary, and the staff member was asked to leave. The key staff member felt that they should be able to coexist together. Ray felt they should not. They could not. Well, that freed up some guys who were very education-oriented, and Wes invited them to join him in Eugene with what became the McKenzie Study Center, still aiming much of its attention to the University of Oregon students. All of a sudden, a five-bedroom house is not large enough. A staff went from 1.5 to 6.5. What do we do with them? Well, we have to have a larger facility. So let's start looking around the university area, what's available. One, the organization, McKenzie Study Center, does not have a bank account either. I mean, they have a bank account, there's nothing in it. So, property in the university area in Eugene is terribly, terribly expensive. We're drawing a blank at every turn. And I'm in my office one day at the radio station. The phone rings, and it's a fellow named Mike Hilty. Mike and I had been students together at Biola 25 years earlier. He was in Eugene, pastoring a smaller church in the south part of town. And Mike says, "Dave, can I see you? Can I come to your office?" And I said, "Sure, Mike." And I reached for my date book. And I'm flipping to next week. Mike says, "No, how about 30 minutes from now?" Okay. He begins to spin out to me a tale. He was part of something called the Newton Foundation. They owned an old frat house just one block from the five-bedroom house. He said, "Dave, we've been operating this now for a number of years. We made it amends. What's the word I want? It's a shared living establishment." He said, "Frankly, we're tired. We get a call in the middle of the night. A freezer has gone out. And we have to do something about it now. It can't wait till tomorrow. And we're tired of dealing with that. And then personality conflicts among the 40 guys that are living there. What we'd like to propose is we give the 17,000 square foot building to McKenzie Study Center, plus one half of our bank account." People, do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not orchestrating anything. I'm along for the ride. And sometimes what a ride it is. More recently, I've been the church representative, to become a Bible church representative, and then a board member at the Fir Point Bible Camp that we send our kids to every year. Most of you here, you know Abigail, Diamond Star's eldest daughter. Bless her. She's been active at Fir Point, mainly as a camper, for all of her high school years, maybe even before that. Getting married, becoming a mother, hey, she now becomes, at least part of the time, a staff member. She's the cook. I'm told quality of food service went up when she became a cook at Fir Point. She came out of the kitchen and evidently was talking to my wife, maybe some others. These ovens keep breaking down. They don't heat to the right temperature. Dinner or lunch is 30 minutes late because the ovens are not doing the job they're supposed to be doing. Can we begin to replace them one at a time so that over a course of years we can replace them? And Bev tells Abigail, go see Dave. Okay. So I just ask her to write it up. Put it down on paper. Distribute the paper to the other board members. The board wants to do the right thing, but as with many small organizations, hands are tied because there's no money. Well, let's send out a letter and see if we can get some response to it for raising money. You know how long it took? $30,000 in 3 weeks? I didn't write the letter. It was just Abigail's connection to the board, that's all. People, our God is great. And what I would like for you all to do is to begin thinking about God in your life and the kind of a roller coaster perhaps he's taking you on. I'm sure that many of you have stories that are similar to the stories I have just related. They should bolster our confidence in the one that we call God, the one that we say loves us, who looks after us, who makes sure that we have what we need, not always what we want. And when I can look back and review what God has done, there are times that I'm shamed, not because of him, because of me. Our God is a great God. And each one of us can be in the flow of history where he reaches down and he does the kind of stuff in which he is honored. And we are like bystanders watching what he is doing. Let's sing about it again.